from Santa Barbara, California. The Timeless Voyager with Bruce Stephen Holmes. Talk radio for the new age. Interviews with well-established professionals in the fields of New Age philosophy, holistic health care, energy healing, psychic phenomena, and extraterrestrial encounters. And now, Bruce Stephen Holmes, the Timeless Voyager.
Hello, everyone. This is Bruce Stephen Holmes, Timeless Voyager Radio, and I'm really very, very happy to have with me today Virginia Seen. We have had a chance to speak for a few moments setting this interview up. She has two books. Actually, she has five books. I have two of them in front of me, and I wanted to tell you about the titles. One of them, of course, is called New Teachings for an Awakening Humanity. And the other one is New Cells, New Bodies, New Life. And she was the editor on that one. Welcome to the show, Virginia.
Thank you very much, Bruce.
Let's start with the books. Now, the first book, New Teachings for an Awakening Humanity, you channeled the Christ energy for that. Is that correct?
It's my understanding.
All right. Why don't you tell me and the listeners a little bit about that?
Well, you know, Bruce, I never expected to be a person who received inspirational material or channeled information, as we sometimes call it. But I'd been meditating for many years, and I was familiar with a lot of the works of people like Edgar Cayce. So the concept was fine. And then here locally in California, where I live in Northern California, people like Kevin Ryerson and a lot of well-known today people were beginning to do their own channeling sessions. And I used to hang out with that crowd, and I helped a lady, Robin Cameron, bring through an energy called the Old One. But I never expected to be a channel, and it wasn't until I had gone with the ARE group of about 45 people for 2 weeks to the Holy Land in 85 that I realized something was afoot here for me.
Now, for our listeners, the ARE is the Association for Research and Enlightenment.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, and they're out of Virginia Beach, for those of you who are interested.
Yeah.
Okay, continue.
So, when I came back from that trip, I had a very profound experience at the Sea of Galilee by Capernaum. I felt I'd been there many times before and knew it well, and I knew something profound was going on, but it wasn't until we went to the Dead Sea Scrolls site, which is called Qumran, that I really just got a cosmic goosebump from top to bottom and realized that I had been there, and I believe that I was at some point or another a part of the scriptural recordings that have been now found to call the Dead Sea Scrolls. So when I got back, I kept getting messages on the inner plane saying, are you ready to proceed and help us as you have promised to do?
Now, just back just for a second. Were you actually hearing a voice or?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, In our line of work, hearing a voice is very important. Of course, on the outside, hearing a voice says silly and...
Yes, you're absolutely right. And many good people, such as Helen, doing the Course in Miracles, and a lot of other people have received such messages. I call it light packages. I get a whole concept with all the feelings, the knowledge, the experience, and I have seen energies of people, individuals such as Christ, Jesus. But, you know, these are natural aspects of our true brain function. It's just that we've so closed down for so long,
okay,
sleeping, as we say.
Yeah, now that's a good point, and let me ask you a question about that. Who are we, and why are we ignorant about these important genetic codes that you are talking about?
Well, my understanding, and people must select whatever feels right for them, is that at one point we were totally functional, soulful, or spiritually bright, energized beings who were not encased in a very dense physical format, which has sensory capacities at what we call the five senses.
Yeah, you're talking about our bodies.
Yes, in our bodies, yeah. And then we also have these higher senses that are at a, you might say, a higher vibratory frequency or at a brighter, lighter configuration, so that we are in contact with other energies which may or may not be encased in bodies. So for me, I don't know, you know, if that makes sense to other folks or not, but we really need to understand somewhere very basically that we're far more electromagnetic creation than we've, you know, studied in school books and the medical field teaches us and so on. And until we get that, it becomes very difficult to explain who we really are. And, you know, I have to laugh in one way when we look back in history and say, oh, my goodness, those poor sailors, they thought they were going to sail off the edge of the world and fall off because they thought it was a flat world. And we're like that. And it's only since the turn of the century, really, since the 1850s and 60s, that we've come into a place of beginning to truly see in the material world with our five physical senses the things that are promissory and available to us as we develop in our human evolution, so that we can have seeing energies, that we can hear other energies speaking, that we can sense and feel them, that we can be in touch with plants and animals, and that all of life has a web. And there was a famous Dr. Chu up at Berkeley who got a Nobel Prize for just telling us that one thing, you know, all life is webbed together and you can't separate it. And when you can't believe that, of course, then you shut off an entire opportunity for growth and development that I think was meant for humans to have.
Now, let's talk a little bit about then your understanding of the universe. Now, you say there are 12 different solar systems in this universe.
Well, actually, we have in what you might say our corner of the galaxy 12 other solar systems that are close by to us, and probably have, you know, close to a million different planets and asteroids and star clusters and so on. If you've ever looked up at the night sky and you realize how incredible it is that we're only looking at a slice of our own Milky Way galaxy in which we reside, in which there are billions of, let's say, physical formatted energies of rock and other materials. And, you know, to look up there and see that we can't even see to the center of our own galaxy. We're way out here on the edge of things, so to speak, in the suburbs. And, you know, there's just a vastness and an awesome revelation of what the great force, whether we call it God or the creator or the source or whatever, has initiated into some kind of physicality. And at the same time, there are many levels of energy that we are incapable of understanding at this point, I think.
Well, you say that there are a total of 1,900,000 planets just in this particular spot.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I think astronomy is coming into a very exciting phase of their experience. People are studying the skies, and when you think back, it's only been a few hundred years since Copernicus and other people, Galileo, who were beginning to see that there was more to life than just our little flat land that we were standing on.
Actually, they were arguing with the church, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
You actually say that we are a spiritual being. We are not just physical. That's what you're saying in the with that question that you ask in one of the chapters, who are we or who are you?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's my understanding, as it's been impressed mm-hmm. upon me to share. And
I mean, your book basically is talking about that almost entirely.
That we are more than we appear.
Right.
Yes. Absolutely. And when you think about it, we had, you know, people are very much unwilling to believe new things until we begin to get what we would call scientific proof or some kind of, you know, a big thing in the paper or on TV or radio or somewhere that says, oh, they made a new discovery. We didn't even know that in our human bodies we had a genetic pattern that governed life itself until the 1950s. And when you think also that we never had the perception then to understand that we had already carried into life this spiritual pattern, which nobody so far in genetic engineering has been able to reproduce. So we have to assume that someone bigger, brighter, and wiser than we is at work here. I think, perhaps not, everyone would agree with that.
You've brought up some very interesting points, and one of them that I'd like to just discuss or at least mention is that you gave some interesting, very interesting examples of the probably most misunderstood of the communication skills that we have, latent. Namely, you likened clairaudience to the developing of the radio, and you likened clairvoyance to the development of the television. And basically, we all know that that the radio waves, of course, are going through the sky or the air, but no one can see it, and yet we can hear things that are happening all over the world. So the radio is kind of like a manifested example of what clairaudience can be.
Absolutely.
And television, the example of what clairvoyance is or can be.
Yes, and one of the most exciting things that we speak about intuition, but that's the deep soul knowing of things, and I think our best example in the scientific area is probably a person like Einstein, who intuited by the wonderful attitude. He always said, I only want to know the thoughts of God, and everything else is a footnote. Now, this is a very intuitive spiritual statement. And as he moved into that willingness to be a receptor or a receiver of information, he suddenly understood the whole thing about relativity at that moment that was his to do. And yet he might have taken 3 months to go back mathematically and work out his equations in the lab. But beings don't have to be like Einstein. All of us have these hunches. All of us have these ahas. And so everybody, whether we are clairvoyant, that is, having the pictures or the voice of clairvoyance, have within us, and I was told once by the energy that I believe to have been Christ Jesus when it was on the planet, that the greatest gift we all have is the gift of soul knowingness, which we call intuition or hunching or conscience or whatever, that within us there is that spark of divinity, that great place of awareness and knowingness that can be interconnected with all life everywhere, anytime, any moment, that we arise to the highest level of vibration. And so for those of us who have meditated or prayed or been serious about wanting to be connected to God, we begin to open realities and opportunities that other people haven't chosen to focus on. Like, I'm a terrible golfer. But other people really attend to golf, and they do it very seriously, and they do it very well. And nobody questions that. It's a talent. It's something that can be developed. So I feel very strongly that we can develop these things, that it's possible and coming more and more into influence today.
All right. Now, in new teachings, you actually, not you, but I guess the Christ energy that came through you, talked about what the Earth's purpose was. And back, well, I guess before 1986, which was when the book was actually published, he said that recent photographic techniques used from space, looking back at Earth, would allow geologists to see actual physical evidence that lies beneath the Earth's surface. And we've seen that recently with the discovery of, I believe, I forget which city it was now, but a historic city that was thought to possibly have been mythology from the Bible has been actually discovered. And
that's,
so...
Yeah, uh-huh.
Now, what I'm wondering is, though, with something like that as kind of evidence that at least the information coming through is certainly real, Jesus says in the book that he came 2,000 years ago to bring this evolution to its conclusion, which I guess started with it's a 250,000-year phase that we've been going through as humanity, moving spiritually, and I was wondering if you'd comment on that.
Well, you know, Bruce, this is a wonderful question. And I believe that if you've ever gone into a clock shop where there are these fancy clocks that have all these little integral things moving around and so on, I think that the universe has these rhythms and cycles of vibration and energies, and things interrelate with each other and influence each other. And it's like that sense of time that we are living in is really influenced by many exterior physical and spiritual qualities that we don't see yet, like until we had all of these flybys with pioneers and different objects that we put up into the sky. We could not see Saturn. We could not really get a good look at Jupiter and so on. So what's had to happen is that these rhythms and cycles, which are everywhere present in the universe that influence us, that are both spiritual, or you might say invisible, if you will, energy invisible, versus the physicality of things. And so as we begin to find out that, holy moly, there are people on this earth who can create little machines that go up there and they can peer into the universe. And so we will be learning more and more about that, and I think we will come one day to understand that there are immense rhythms and cycles, that there are other life forms out there who are busy doing their things. I mean, can you imagine in 1969 was the first time we ever glimpsed the Earth from afar? That had to be an opening perception, just as the airplanes that were discovered at the turn of the century moved us from the Piscean Age into the Aquarian Age, leaving behind the water, leaving behind the things that were transported across the seas and the rivers and so on, and moving to the skies. In that leap, we were ready intellectually and emotionally to begin to dream of the stars again. And we have just been continuing along that line, and I think it's a wonderful, exciting time.
So now, what is Earth's purpose? I understand, for example, as far as spiritual dimension, that has only existed for about 8 million years above the Earth.
Well, and you know, we have to understand that when we're talking time periods, that's something that's a human characteristic. We like our measurement very much, and in fact, it's that persistence in staying in that third-dimensional definition of time and space that keeps us from really going into higher vibratory frequencies of a fourth or farther-out dimension. So, yes, when we were being third-dimensional, this is a creation which we are involved in, and I believe the whole Earth and all of humanity and life on the planet is being moved through these rhythms and cycles and these influences or vibrations of energy that we can't even see mostly. People can take an X-ray, but who ever saw one until you saw this thing later developed off of a photographic image? So there's life everywhere around us. And if it started 8 million years ago or 10 or, you know, the important thing is that there is a pattern, there is a plan, there is an activity. And most importantly, if we're willing to release any belief that says we can't advance, we can't understand, that's the willingness that it takes to develop the advancing of human evolution where it's destined to be, I think. I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, what I was wondering was, you say that the purpose on the... What is the... the Earth's purpose?
We're a part of a family of solar brothers and sisters, I guess we could call them. We have found out that there is a sun and a moon and all these nine planets out there. I'm told that there were once 12 planets and that we will find one in the asteroid belt and two others will be discovered. But be that as it may, the main thing here is that we are to be a planet of love and wisdom. The heart in what we would call the world at large is the one thing that can bring us to peace. Our minds, our intellectual achievements of building bridges and so on are useful, and the intelligence of a linear capacity is vital in the left brain of the human body. But the right brainer, the intuitive, the dreamer, the creator, the imaginer, the connected one to all of life, that's the part of us that has to be developed. And as we develop that and express that and learn that, then we can pattern that everywhere. And it's important for us to learn that lesson well and to be able to be vital practitioners of peace and harmony and learning to cooperate and work things out so that wherever in the universe or in this cosmic location of our galaxy, that we can show that it can be done.
Now, you say that we are being influenced by energies greater and wiser than ourselves, and you actually refer to them as beings. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the first one I ever saw was an energy that came... I don't know if you saw that segment of Star Trek where this particular race was beginning to mutate a few of them. This one man in particular, he was being tracked down by his former governmental people who were frightened of him, and he began to have these periods where he would go into a glow. And at the end, he absolutely turns into this glowing figure. And I thought, I cried the night I saw that, because when Jesus appeared to me, it was like this glowing light around his radiance. It was so powerful that I will never forget it. So that's one kind, but you can also see little energies around all living things. There are lights and colors, and after all, energy is sound and light and out of that color. And so we have all these things. And now there are, I understand, people that we would call people who have gone on higher and higher in their vibratory frequencies who do not need to have the physicality of the body. But I think for most of us, it's a reassurance to know that when we translate or ascend or die or whatever way we're going to get off the planet, that is not the end of life. Jesus has told us, look, you don't have to do it the hard way. I'm here. Whether you think he was originally a holographic image or someone's imagination, or whether he was a real historical figure and a great spiritual lord of light, the great benefactor of humanity, there is a pattern, and we used to have that. We used to be that glowing figure of light. And so I think there are many forms also that are physical. There, all this talk about the government in cahoots with the UFOs, and they have little physical bodies. So there are many levels and dimensions of physical and spiritual vibration, radiance, and light that are possible, and I think we're just at the stepping stone to begin to even understand any of it well.
Now, you actually refer to prayer, meditation, channeling, intuition as communication devices to communicate with these higher beings, or they don't even have to be higher beings, other beings.
Well, and I think many people on the planet are in telepathic communication with each other. It often happens with families or loved ones, dear spouse members, or spiritual family members with whom you're very, very close. And what happens in that period is there's a sensory transference of something from one being to the other. Sometimes it's a deep feeling. People during the war would have, a woman would wake up at night and her son would be materialized at the foot of her bed. And she'd not believe that. How could he be there? He was off in the war. And then a few days later, she'd be advised by the War Department, guess what? Your son was killed in action. What happened? That was even a materialization, let alone a mental function, where he might have just put into her mind, Mom, I love you, and goodbye, I'm leaving. You know, these. When you talk about energy, we really are very ignorant, and the most important thing in the world is energy. And we're ignorant about it. We don't know why our brains function the way we do. We don't know why we sleep and why we have to have sleep. They're just all kind of, well, we say we do, but there are just so many unanswered questions about the true totality of our beingness. And so if we don't even know who we are, how can we deny that there is a greater power and an enormous, you can call it creator, God, what source, whatever you wish, that has somehow begun this immense an exciting development of many life forms. And I think it's very important that we be willing to open our minds to learn. And I know many people say, well, if you know, I'm from Missouri, if I can't see it, it's not there. It's not there for them because at that moment their brain functioning properties have not come into a place where they're able to do that yet. Yet they wouldn't think anything funny of somebody, you know, in sports being able to beat the 5-6 minute mile that used to be there, jump up over a certain number of feet or up in the air and go over. You know, we're constantly expanding. If people could understand that what we do physically, we can also do spiritually. Every great sports hero who attends to doing that thing is applying his energy and interest to a particular focus. We can do the same thing in spiritual interests.
Now, you say that communities of like-minded beings are forming everywhere.
Well, you've met them all around the world in... Jacques Cousteau decides that he's interested in something, and he attracts interest, and many people all over the globe become interested in what he does, and they go out and they start their own organizations, and they get involved in saving the environment or caring for ocean creatures or whatever the case may be.
But you see, it's very interesting the way you say that, because you say that this happens on energy grid meridians and ley lines around the planet. So it just doesn't happen anywhere, does it?
Well, it is interesting that you know, if we believe, like the Chinese have proven to us through their understanding of medicine, that the human body is an energy field and it has its little highway functions that interchange with each other.
And you're talking about the acupressure areas.
Yes, the acupressure, puncture, meridians of the body. Then can we dare believe that the Earth itself is similarly energized by these great forces of light and sound that come to us from afar in the universe and the galaxy through these rhythms and cycles of energies?
So we don't really do a lot of things on our own. We're actually, if we decide to get involved, we actually find ourselves gravitating towards these ley lines, as you say.
Well, and yes, and also through certain activities, you know, you'll find as you travel around the world, as I have, when you speak to people, there'll seem to be a whole community where people are just turned on about something to do with healing, and it becomes a great healing center, sometimes even called a sacred site. And people are drawn there from all over the world. And we don't think that's peculiar, that they want to go to Lourdes or some place where they feel there's something going on.
No, but we don't know that it occurs that way. I think that's what's interesting here. The point is, I think a lot of people somehow never even thought about it, why all these people are together. For example, why is everybody in Sedona? Why
right.
They pick Sedona? And
yes.
you're saying that's not a mistake.
No, it's an energy vibration from the vortexes there that are very, let's say, commanding in their influence to certain people who feel them or who just feel great when they go to Sedona. And when I stood down in Cape Town at the end of South Africa there, looking toward Antarctica across the Indian and oceans of Atlantis, formerly the Atlantic Ocean, and I said to myself, you know, I don't know much about this planet. Oh, we're so ignorant. We don't even know what it used to look like or what it was when it was all together in one skin, so to speak, in the tectonic plates that they recently finally agreed to say, you know, exist. So we're just learning all these exciting, wonderful things.
Virginia, I wanted to ask you some questions about our brains, which have been evidently given a vibratory upgrade, or at least that's what you say, that our shifting, our perception of time has changed now. What has happened here?
Well, I can only tell you what I experienced with a friend, a spiritual sister of mine, Anne Valentine, I did two books myself, New Teachings and then Secret Truths for Young People. Then Anne and I worked on two books. One was Cosmic Revelation and one Descent of the Dove. And in Descent of the Dove, there's a chapter on time. And what's explained in there is that by these rhythms and cycles as they interchange with the energies around our planet, that it's sort of like in a computer, we've been given a faster chip capacity. And so our brains are actually operant, opening or whatever you want to call it, becoming more active, more fulfilled out of the great cranial capacity we have. They say Einstein only used 6% of his brain. I don't know about the rest of us. So as we open these greater capacities within ourselves, I think we experience it the way it was explained to me as time rushing faster by. But it's our perception. It's just that we have the capacity to be in higher frequencies, and therefore the density or the solidity or the structure of everyday life seems to have been speeded up. And in fact, what's happened is that our perception of reality is shifting. And many people have written about this, and I think it's everywhere I go, and I don't know how it is with you and your friends, people say to me, I can't believe it. I got up and I had these things I was going to do. And in fact, the day went, and I don't know where it went. I didn't get these things done. And one thing, Bruce, I really want to stress today is that we are not bad or crazy or inefficient or whatever. It's just that we have to learn some new techniques, which are clearly delineated in new cells, of ways that we can learn to work with these energies so that we can do the jobs that we need to smoothly and efficiently and prioritize in a way that the true, you might say, soul purposes or the real life interests that are so compelling in us get handled first, and that we stop being caught up in all the unnecessary stuff of life.
Now, I need to interrupt you for a second. You're actually saying that 20% of our time is gone. Now, does that mean, I mean, are the atomic clocks also speeding up? I mean, is this just something that has gone by everyone, or...
You see, there is no time in the fourth dimension. Let's just imagine that if you could superimpose on our planet the fact that there is one time or no time. For instance, I recently went back east to speak, and it was 3 hours difference when I got there on my watch. Well, actually, I was still the same consciousness. I didn't change. There was nothing different in me except that my physical body had been moved. So we're talking about structure. We're talking about physical structure. And time is simply a mathematical agreement that we have amongst each other to keep things straight. I don't know, you know, when you take your watch off and you go back to a more relaxed state of being, in which many more so-called primitive, although I'm always embarrassed when we say that about many native and natural people, that they live by God's rule. They live by when the sun comes up and the moon shines and the stars and the seasons and cycles of growth. And they're a part of something in nature that we have in the cities. I think cities today and throughout history, the metropolitan areas, the urbanization, has constantly gone through terrible times and decline because they're just putting too many people together in one place who do not have a common purpose, and out of that there is only going to come a terrible destruction eventually. Because you have to have a motive that holds people together. When you get big groups, they begin to splinter and go off and do crazy things.
You actually say, though, that we've been given a vibratory upgrade which has shifted our perception of time. Why do we have this upgrade?
Because eventually
who gave it to us? Who gave it to us and why?
Yeah, well, I think you have to say that the God, creator force, energy, has these rhythms and cycles that affect the entire universe, and that within the universe all of these different things are occurring. Like I was mentioning, you know, if you could imagine, you know, 199 clocks all working interdependently, influencing each other, cycles of energy and rhythms, and that they have in some way created this adventure for us, which allows us to move into a place where manifesting thought happens more immediately. The thing about a third-dimensional world is it takes a lot of focused thought to create anything. You have to start with your thoughts, and then you have to go through all this process and planning and work and physical labors, and finally you get the building built or whatever that you started with the picture of in the first place. As we go into higher frequencies and vibrations, we manifest things much more quickly by thought, and this is why the great healers of the past, even someone like Sai Baba in India, can actually for a moment hold a material object apparently created from nothing, but he's able to get into a frequency where he can control through his thought focus and imagine and focus and envision something now that he then brings out as a ring. People think that's trickery. They accuse Jesus and many other people of not, you know, doing things that seem so far-fetched.
Well, it has been suggested by certainly many people that this is exactly how the pyramids were built, and this is why no matter what level of development we attain, we'll never be able to make anything quite like the pyramids.
Well, I'd like to just remind myself, Bruce, that up until now, we haven't been able to do that. But I want us to teach the children never to say never to them. Always say, up until now, my little darling, this is the way we've done it, or this is the way we've thought, but I want you to know anything is possible.
Well, I'll back off on that, but what I really meant to say was that even at this point in our supposedly sophisticated building techniques, we do not have the apparatus would allow us to...
At the physical level, we haven't figured out how to do that either.
And it appears that it would be highly unlikely to be able to pull that off at the physical level anyway. I guess that's a better way of saying it.
Yes, that's very much more precise. I appreciate that, and I was flowing with you a little off base there. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, anyway, I think the thing that we have so many things to cover today, and I'm sorry that it may sound a little disjointed. For those of you who are listening, this is Bruce Stephen Holmes, Timeless Voyager Radio, and we are talking today with Virginia Seen. You have edited a book with 12 channels.
Yes.
And this one, of course, is New Cells, New Bodies, New Life. Let's talk a little bit about that book.
What I'd like to share with you is that I began meditating in the 70s, and as I began to get an interior intuition and then these more highly sensed capacities of hearing and seeing things sometimes, I realized that something was afoot. And so I did my inner work, let's say. I did my own inner work. I did a lot of hospice work, training on grief and bereavement processes, and so I had to go through and find out more who I was at an emotional level and the kinds of barriers, and I still have those. I'm not perfected at all, but I at least know that I can respond out of old patterns which were put into my subconscious at a very, very early age that I don't even know what's in there. And that sometimes those were negative patterns. And so I think that what's happened is we clean up our own act a little bit, and then we find another person. So the first books I did were mine exclusively. The second one I worked with a partner to learn how to do that in concert, where two or more are gathered. And then I was told, now it is time for people to begin to work in groups. Group consciousness is critical. Spiritual communities are critical. Because as you begin to manifest something, by being in these higher frequencies and vibrations, it has to be with like-minded people to truly bring down the walls of Berlin or to break up totalitarian thought. And people can do that when they come together in a common vision and purpose for peace or harmony or preservation of life. Whatever it is they want to do, if they do it having cleaned up their own act first, learn to work a little bit with some other people, then now we can approach the time when the new children who come in will not be as limited in what they're taught. Each generation gives to the next. Has there ever been a parent who hasn't said, I want a better world for my child? And yet the way we get the better world is by being better a judgment, meaning less ignorant about who and what we really are in our unlimited capacities of spiritual beings.
All right, so
for me, go ahead.
So I mean, so you put this book together. It's with 12 channels,
right,
looking at different or bringing in different energies with different information.
That's right. So that people could see, no matter where the information was coming from, that we could all agree to have no fear, because we didn't know what anybody else was going to say, that we could agree that we had a common goal, which was to share information that we felt was valuable about the DNA transformation and the genetic structure of the human being, and to begin to explain a little bit about how that got there in the first place, what's happening to us now, and I think in the first chapter some very precise, helpful hints about how to live with this experience we're going through of speeded up time or feeling we're rushed and can't keep up. And I really want to say that it was not an easy task, because you get 12 very busy people who are running around the world and doing important things and have their own concerns to agree, yes, I'll sit down, I'll do that with you. And so it's a pattern. The pattern is first, do yourself. Work with another. Learn to be where the two are gathered in the name of the Christ or the wisdom and love of the universe, whatever word you prefer. And then learn, begin now in small groups to function effectively so you can manifest and continue to bring forth things on the planet, because you've broken down a lot of negative thought forms that people have held for so long because they've never examined themselves and they didn't know how to get to peace inside. And so now having 12 people is a model, and each brings a particular information, and it shows again that beyond the visible, there is invisible information, and people will experience that and feel it and be touched by it in different ways.
Let's talk a little bit then for a moment about the contents and the different beings, because I think a lot of people who have not read this kind of information may be surprised. Certainly Christ Jesus, that's a hard one for a lot of Christians to swallow, but I always say to them, if Jesus really truly is everywhere, every time, and has no time, what makes you think he doesn't want to talk to anyone?
Well, and people have all over the world heard him in prayer, if you want to think of it as a hymn. I don't. It's an energy far beyond our physical bodies. But the thing about it is our perception, and you see, we keep... The reason I was bringing new teachings out by 1986 at Easter was this being's great love for this planet was, I don't want you to think of me as the crucified one. I want you to think of me only as the transformed being that you are becoming.
Right, the living Christ as opposed to the one that died on the cross, right.
Right, and we keep looking back to this pitiful physical experience that some people find, saves them. But if we thought that that's all he was, and we don't look to where he went from there for 2,000 years, what has this being been doing? He's been out here in this wonderful creation and helping us. And I can understand, I tell you frankly, when I I'm a former college teacher and now retired from that. When I started being told that and seeing this being, and I just thought, boy, I flipped, I'm out of it. If I hadn't been meditating for years, I don't know what I would have done with such an experience. Where I'd already felt the warmth and caring of Jesus, as many prayerful people do. People love Jesus, and that love brings them into close contact with the vibratory comfort and the wisdom. The thing is, we've always thought of him only as a love being, but if we can understand that that being, in order to get here and do what he did, had to be very cosmic, very godlike, very universal, very energized in these high vibratory frequencies, or he could never have made it here. It's too dark and dreary. So to me, that's the important thing. I don't expect anyone to believe and surrender their perceptions except by free will. And that's the way this planet works, and that's why it's so difficult, because we have over 100 and some countries, innumerable languages, belief systems that are so separate and divisive one from another. And yet in this wonderful moment on this planet, we're being helped to understand that within us are all the tools that we'll ever need to pull this one off.
What about your understanding of the Archangel Michael? Let's talk a little bit about that Archangel.
I feel very close to Archangel Michael and Orpheus Phylos, who channels him beautifully. We may be going to South Africa together. It's not just clear very wise, knowledgeable, loving, and has been the protector of life on this planet. If we want to think of ourselves as having a defender, although there are many, many beings, you know, we cannot single out. When we talk about the energies of the great archangel, which is this vision of a great beaming ray of light and then can materialize and do what it pleases here, there, and everywhere, you have to be very imaginative. And I think a part of what Jesus was talking about when he said, be like a little child, children are open to be imaginative. And they say, oh, well, that couldn't really be, you know, that was just a little imagining you had of the fantasy world you're creating. But out of imagination and vision is materialization possible. And we can never have anything, at least in my belief system, that we haven't been able to think about as a possibility. Yeah, that could really happen. I could build a building, or I could drive a car, or I could find a wonderful mate, or I could do whatever. You have to have the belief. If you don't have a belief that it's possible, then you can't energize it. And it's through the vision and the application of energy to that vision that things change. And I think, from what I'm told from my guidance, is that beings on this planet who have wanted peace desperately and who have called for help have actually attracted in this great hierarchical expression of energies that exist, who have compassion and love and wisdom, to be drawn to us, to help us, to do everything they can, to whisper little whispers to tell us, hey, this is it going here, and to awaken us. And you can see it. If you get a whole group of people who are going to do a project and they're really serious about it, I mean, you can do anything from building an atomic bomb that you want to drop on somebody to going out and saving the rainforests if you apply yourself. There's nothing that a group of, I'll say, enlightened beings, at least those seeking to understand and do things constructive, there's nothing we can't do. We've been promised. And we have to believe that we do make a difference, and one individual does matter. And the thing that's really critical for me to share that I hope everybody will hear is that everybody is valuable. I can tell you of a woman in Spokane who totally changed the chemical toxicities that were being dumped in a river, even though she was an unemployed single parent. Nobody would listen to her. She took upon herself, through the love of her children who were suffering, physical manifestations of this poor drinking water. She went through all kinds of processes that most people wouldn't have bothered to do, but she did it from love. Love and something you want to do that's positive cannot be stopped because it's energy. And if we can see it in our thoughts, though we don't perceive it with our eyes, physical in every case, it's still there, and we can direct it.
Okay, we're getting close here to the end of the show, but I want to ask you a few questions. You talk a little bit about what you think the future is going to bring us at this point, what the potentials are and the probabilities.
Well, given that more and more people are prayerful, spiritual meditators who envision peace, even if they're just regular folks who've never thought of meditating or whatever, if they start wanting a planet that's different than what we've created thus far, then we are operating with potential and probabilities, and we can help create a future that is very different than what we have now. And, you know, there are all kinds of things coming through now in science and technology, great inventions coming through. There are food types and substances that we're discovering, quote and unquote. We can see that in the breakdown of totalitarianism, the United States is also going to have to face its own attachment to the economic materialism that has been capitalistic running amok, in my view, and hasn't been looking to the highest and best good of the planet and all life upon it. So everybody is going to get shook up. The thing that you're holding on to in energy and in attachment, you know, really wanting this more than anything, that is the thing now that will have to come into a balance of love and wisdom. and it doesn't matter whether it's government or monetary systems. And so we're going to go through this time of some shifting and changing. But on the other side of that is this immense and exciting new time. We've talked about new ages and golden ages and all that, but all we're talking about is an evolutionary process where people who agree to do something positive keep creating something better and better, and the next people build upon that, and the groups just keep growing, and the opportunities become more exciting and creative, and it just gets better and better. So, but there will be this time, because we have to release hanging on to these very rigid beliefs that we have about what's good and what, and I'm afraid we're, as a group of people, often very selfish, and we don't look to the higher and best good of the planet and all people and all life, and therefore we get into a lot of trouble, because the thing that we keep focusing on, such as putting, you know, money into action and then not being responsible for the fact that it creates unpleasant things in rainforests or wherever, that it takes away monies that can be expended for homeless and starving people. Doesn't it shock you to know that 10 or 20,000 people die every minute on this planet from something? I mean, I'm shocked. People are starving all over the world, even in the United States. One of every three children born in the United States is born into poverty level defined by the government. And we're wealthy compared to the rest of this planet. We see these little children looking out with their big brown eyes and their swollen stomachs ready to die on the television sets. And then what do we do? So we've got to get into the potential probability of peace and wholesome living for all people and just work at that from a very compacted, focused attitude and then put it into action and by practical measures. And this is a great challenge. But we have to prepare ourselves to be open to do these things so that the new generation, which will be coming out, and I talk about their incredible tomorrow, what is their tomorrow going to be like if we don't heal ourselves of all of the unpeaceful beliefs and attitudes and actions that we've had? We'll just be teaching them the same thing that we were taught that we had to sort out and spend all these years getting clear about. And the thing that worries me most about society at large, particularly in technological societies, is that the vision, the physical eye, and the hearing, the auditory ear, are being constantly bombarded by somebody else's ideas and somebody else's violence, so that the true higher nature of clairaudience and clairvoyance are being subjugated and held from people because they're not quiet and silent enough to open and develop those very, very important and, I think, promised human capabilities.
All right, Virginia, I'm sorry we're out of time. This is Bruce Stephen Holmes, Timeless Voyager Radio. We've been listening to Virginia Sehan. She is the author of Cosmic Revelation, Descent of the Dove, New Teachings, Secret Truths, and New Cells, New Bodies, New Life. You also have a newsletter called the Love Core Newsletter.
Yes, we do, Bruce.
Thank you very much for being with us today, Virginia.
Bruce, God bless you. You're wonderful.
All right. Thank you for tuning into the Timeless Voyager. This is Bruce Stephen Holmes. I hope that your own personal voyage through life towards the development of your highest potential is a joyous and successful one. Thank you.